We would like to thank Karen Jake Abelavis for sponsoring this morning's Lachsalun, Le'ilu and Ishmael, Sheikh's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba, and Leah Bas Abram, and Karen's brother, Yoshua ben Shimon Dov. The neshama should have an Aliyah. We are in the midst of one gigantic Mishnah, which hopefully we will finish today. I believe this is our fourth shir trying to analyze this Mishnah. We will read what we've done so far and then read what we will do today. If you look in source number one, this is all the statements of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says the following few things. Im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. Im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. Without Torah, there is no, translated here, worldly occupation. We've also seen character, midos, or some sort of symbiotic relationship between the study of Torah and good character and or worldly occupation. Number two, im ein chachma ein yir, without wisdom there is no fear, im ein yir ein chachma. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what those mean as well. And then what we did 2 weeks ago, im ein bina ein das, im ein das ein bina, there has to be some level of understanding and knowledge. Those two go hand in hand. And then finally, what we will focus on for the bulk today, im ein kemach ein Torah, im ein Torah ein kemach. Without flour, there is no Torah, and without Torah, there is no flour. So what in the world is flour? What are we talking about? It's obviously a metaphor for something. It doesn't literally mean flour. Presumably, what's the first thing that'll pop into our head when we hear this? What is the message supposed to be? You need sustenance. You need nourishment. Right? Maybe you need money. If that's the case, then we might have to reread the first relationship of Torah and Derech Eretz. Because if we understand Derech Eretz as worldly occupation, some level of job or livelihood, then we would have to fit that in with the fact that that seems to be redundant with Kemach and Torah. I mean, if I understand Derech Eretz as being character, then it's two separate messages. There's a message about character, and there's a message about nourishment, money, etc. through the Kemach and Torah. But if I understood Derech Eretz as worldly occupation, then there's some redundancy with then three sentences later saying you also need Kemach and Torah to go together. It sounds like it's talking about the same thing. So perhaps there's nuance that we can explain, but for now we're just going to focus on the fact that there's something to do with flour, money, sustenance. Is it money? Is it focusing on the physical elements of eating? Right. This is the classic. This actually should be our tagline for the shir, right? Im ein kemach ein Torah. Without the bagels, there is no Torah. So without the Torah, there is no bagels. So we have to figure out exactly what we're talking about. So let's jump into the sources. Source number two, actually, you know what? If you look in the same source that we just did, where it says 5 and 6 in source number one, we might do that later on if we have time. If we do have time, we'll come back and reread it in the Mishnah. It's fundamentally a different topic, so we'll come back to it. I don't want to read it now, it'll get us lost. Let's focus on Kemach and Torah and jump into source number two. Now, source number two, Barry asked a few weeks ago to try to analyze Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's statements within his character, within what we know about him from other places in the Talmud. And the Magen Avos of the Rashbats does that a little bit. So he's going to frame, and maybe we should have done this a few weeks ago, he's going to frame Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's teachings within what else we know about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in terms of his character. One other preceding element before we read this inside, who was the character of the Mishnah before Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Who were we talking about for a few weeks before this? Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so we're going to have to know that there's a connection between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So here we go. Look at source number two. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer HaPerush. So he says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah haya chaveiro shel Rabbi Akiva. So they were friends. Kemosh Shiniskar Bivamos. He's going to rattle off a bunch of different Gemaras that all indicate that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah were friends. There's one Gemara in Bivamos, Sha'am Rabbi Akiva Bitarmilo Vanichai. So there's, again, connections between the two. V'chen B'perek Echa Dine Mamonos, another Gemara, Amar Rabbi Akiva Malacha Eitzal Agada, V'chen Kishemanu Asol Lanasi. So we have another element in Brachos, this is the famous one, when they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as a Nasi. And this is what, you know, if we get ready, it's already almost Pesach, right? So in the Haggadah, we have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, where he says, Hare ani kiven shivim shana, it's as if I'm 70 years old. That's a reference to this Gemara in Brachos, that he was a young man who was appointed to become the leader after they deposed Rabbi Gamliel as being the leader. Rabbi Akiva was a possibility to be appointed as leader. He was up for the running, but he was disqualified because for a number of reasons. So the Rashbats is going to explain a little bit. When they appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as a nasi, when they removed Rabbi Gamliel, Ratzu limnos Rabbi Akiva. They wanted to appoint Rabbi Akiva. So before, you wouldn't have had the story in the Haggadah, right? You wouldn't have had that idea that he became old in a day, get the white hairs, because it almost was Rabbi Akiva. If it was Rabbi Akiva, we probably wouldn't know that much about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because he wouldn't have made it into the Haggadah. So il male hayalos chus avos, he might have made it into the Haggadah on his own merit, but that story wouldn't have made it into the Haggadah. So il male hayalos chus avos sheyam mishpachas gerim. So Rabbi Akiva was from a family of converts, and that was not seen, right? If you had the choice between having somebody who had a family history that was connected and powerful and was well known, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, versus a family history that was a less well known, like Rabbi Akiva, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was chosen over that. Umanu es Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shia asiri la Ezra. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had connections. He went all the way back to Ezra, who's famous from Tanakh. That's what the Gemara in Brachos says, as well as the Gemara in Menachos, Beperek Kol HaMenachos Boos, Uvarisho Min Brachos, another Gemara in Brachos. So Amar Lo Rabbi Yishmael, Achi Yishmael, okay, it's fine. So basically, until this point, they're connected. He's connected to Rabbi Akiva. What else do we know about him, besides the fact that he was connected to Rabbi Akiva, besides the fact that he, you know, got white hairs pretty quickly, and besides for the fact that he was appointed as Nasi? So here we're in the fifth line of the second source. We're at fourth word on the line after the period. Vaya Ashir Gadol. He was very wealthy. And that's important because that sort of puts into perspective what we're reading about in our Mishnah. There's some connection, he's telling us, between Torah and Derech Eretz, or Kemach and Torah. So he is somebody who has wealth. He isn't somebody who was, you know, living off of nothing. He had wealth. So now his message is going to be colored through that prism, perhaps. So Vaya Asher Gadol, Shemaiser B'chol Shana Tracer Alfei Egle. He used to take off 1/10 of his property to give to tzedakah, was 13,000 cattle. K'moshe Nizkor B'perek Bameh Behema, as the Gemara in Shabbos says, B'perek Shanim Yom Tov, the Gemara in Beitz as well. So that's a lot of, do the math, that's a lot of animals to have. Ulezehu mechayev es ha'ashirim b'yom ha'din. And because of that, because he had so much wealth, he's used as a paradigm for people who are wealthy, who complain, I can't really learn so much Torah, I have too much money to take care of, right? I have too, my bank account's too big, I have too much of a business to run, I don't have time to sit down and learn Torah. Look how much tzedakah I'm giving, and because I'm giving all of that tzedakah, I need to focus on my business and my wealth. No, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had all the money, had all the big businesses, but still was able to be a Torah scholar. So he is looked up as a paradigm to be mechayev us, to hold us to his standard. Again, it's a high standard to be held to. But just because you have money is not an excuse to not learn Torah. So again, Elazehu mechayev es hashirim b'yom adin, shein oskim b'torah b'nei oshram, k'mo shenizkor b'yuma, another gemara in Yuma, perek amar lahem hamemuna, v'chen amru perek haro and brachos, shero so b'cholom yitzapel g'dula. If you see Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in a dream, so you, that is an omen that you will have some high level of stature. So now, because of that, everything that he's going to mention in this Mishnah shows that you need both together. If you don't have Torah, you're not going to be able to be ethical in your business transactions. Because the whole point of the Torah is to guide us into following Hashem's ways. So what you see here, and well, he talks more and more and more, but just to frame, what he's doing is he's framing the Mishnah in terms of the biography of Elazar ben Azariah. Elazar ben Azariah had money, he was a man of stature, and because of that, everything he's telling us, ain't Torah, ain't Derech Eretz. Okay, here's it's one thing for somebody who doesn't have a successful business to tell me about business practices and its relation to Torah. It's another for somebody who has both business and and Torah to be able to tell me about that relationship. And same thing, I think, what we're going to read today in terms of Kemath and Torah coming from Elazar ben Azariah, who was able to balance these two things together very nicely and very well, serves as a paradigm for us as how to balance food, wealth, etc. with Torah scholarship. Fine. Now, our question is going to be as follows. Same similar question that we asked in previous elements of this Mishnah, is that it seems to be a black and white statement. Without Torah, there's no Derech Eretz. Without Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. But what about people who have Torah and don't have Derech Eretz? And what about people who have Derech Eretz and don't have Torah? So frame that in terms of Kemach and Torah. So whatever Kemach means, whatever, however you want to define it, how are you going to tell me straight up, without Kemach, there is no Torah? There are plenty of people who have Kemach. Again, whatever that means, literally food, or if it means wealth, there are people who have that who don't have Torah. So why are you making this black and white statement? And on the flip side, there are people who have Torah and don't have any food. So what's with the black and white statement? So look at source number three. He's actually going to make it even a more strongly black and white statement. He's not going to reinterpret anything. Rav Avram Farisol is going to tell us that we have to take this literally. End of the first line, after the period, four words from the end. V'achar hevi Torah achar v'amar. So he explains him, ein kemach, ein Torah. Lodia ki im lo ye kemach. If we don't have this flour, v'achanas mazon, etzal is. So he interprets flour as nourishment, as having food. Ma liman yitain libo limshoch be'esek ha-Torah. So you're not going to be able to study, to concentrate. You're not going to have the brain power to be able to focus. You're not going to be able to attend to the needs that are necessary for focusing on Torah. So without the nourishment, without the food, you're not going to be able to study. That we understand, and that makes sense, biologically, scientifically. Without food, you can't study. And that's why, if you go to elementary schools, you got to make sure you have a nice breakfast. The kids have to have a nice breakfast. They don't have a nice breakfast. They don't have food at home. And they come into school, and they don't have food for lunch. So that's why we have to, provide food for them, so they're able to focus. V'chein, now he says, on the flip side. That we understand. What about the flip side? Im ein Torah, she yisna adam ha'esek ba, o she yivrach mi'is'asek ba. Somebody doesn't want to learn Torah. He doesn't like it. He runs away from Torah. So what does that mean? He's not going to have nourishment? So Rav Avram Farisol says, yes. Because yechtav ashem b'ashem v'yipo b'anios v'dalos adin kemach. You're sinning, and God's going to punish you. You don't have Torah. You're not learning. You're running away from Torah. You will become poor. That's what he says. That's what he says. Zem ma'ashra isa l'daber b'ela derecha. So that's what I think is the pshat. If you don't learn, God will punish you and you will not have money. It's still too black and white because we see it. It's not a reality. It's not empirical. Look around us. There are plenty of people who don't learn Torah and they have what to eat. So how he's making this black and white statement, I know it's very hard for us to stomach that and to just accept that at face value, but he seems pretty comfortable saying it. If you look at source number four, so the Rabbeinu Yonah is already going to help us start reinterpreting and not taking it as black and white. So Rabbeinu Yonah says as follows, Yim ein Torah ein kemach, kelomar, me'achar she'ein bo Torah, ein to'eles ha'kemach ola. So what did he just do? The to'eles of the kemach doesn't matter. What does the to'eles of the kemach mean? The result, the effect. You have, if you don't learn, yeah, you're going to have food, you're going to be able to eat, that's not the problem, but it's meaningless. Right? So now we're taking it from a practical, empirical, reality-based statement that without Torah you will have no food. That's ridiculous. We have plenty of people who don't have Torah and have food. So Rabbeinu Yonah is reinterpreting it to mean that your food is not serving any deeper spiritual essence. There's no purpose to what you're doing. You'll have the food, but it's meaningless. Right? It's ain't to eles hakemach ola. Shein adam mo'il ba'osro elekadeshu tzarche aguf mitsuyon v'yulu p'nai lasuk b'torah. The only reason why we have food, why we have money, is in order for us to learn, and not just learn, osek has a broader sense, to deal, to live a life of Torah. So if we don't use our money, our food, our nourishment in order to provide us with that strength to be able to serve God better, there's no toelis. It's going to happen. You're going to survive. You're going to have food. But there's no deeper significance. There's no meaning behind it. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah reinterprets it. And the message you can't deny and say, oh, but there are wealthy people who don't learn Torah. Okay, that's nice. But their lives are meaningless, he'll say. So now, that's Rabbeinu Yonah. We're going to go back to the Magen Avos. Look at source number 5. He's the same person we saw in source number 2. But now he's going to say something differently in source number 5. So he says, "Im ein kemach ein Torah. Shim ein lo moshiyochal heach yasuk b'Torah." That we understand. If you don't have what to eat, you're not going to be able to learn. For arm of medrash tanchuma, there's a medrash that says this explicitly, and in the Mechilta, "Lo nitna Torah el odora midbar shiu ochle aman shnayim lahem ochle truma im ein Torah ein kemach keni nusas rabbeinu Moshe v'cheni b'miksa v'ksas mishnayos." Now focus on the we're in the middle of the third line. V'zeh davar nira she'eno emes. This seems not to be true. That if you don't have Torah, you're not going to have food. This is the reason why we're reading this, is because he says that Rabbeinu Yonah, who we just read in the previous source, is forcing his interpretation. Dochak. It's not accurate, really, but he has to say it. He's stretching it. Rabbeinu Yonah has to stretch it, reinterpret it, to say we're talking about meaning, not reality. So it's important to realize that we're reinterpreting. What Rabbeinu Yonah is doing is reinterpreting what seems to be the simple pshat of the Mishnah. And the Rashbats goes on to say that there's different girsos we're not going to get into. There's different ways of reading the Mishnah that perhaps you don't have to reinterpret it. But it is important to point out that this reinterpretation is, according to the Rashbats, a stretch. It's docha. I didn't quote it. He gives it. He gives his own. We're going to see more explanations. But it's just, I think it was important to point out that when you're critiquing, you could critique other interpretations because it doesn't seem to fit the accurate reading of the Mishnah. Now, to us, we might say that it's not dochak because we've been doing that the whole time, right? Every single element of this Mishnah, we've been saying it can't mean literally you can't have one without the other. Because you could have Torah without Derech Eretz, and you could have Derech Eretz without Torah. You could have Chachma without Yira, you could have Yira without Chachma, you could have Bina without Das, and you could have Das without Bina. It's Rabbeinu Yonah and others along the lines have said it meant not total, right? Shalim, that was the key word. It doesn't mean total, complete. You can't be complete in those areas without the other one, but you can have some element of one without the other. It has to be that way, otherwise these black and white statements just don't hold up to reality the way that we see it. Look at source number 6, the Me'iri. So here's another interpretation. It's a very practical interpretation. So the Me'iri says, "V'amar achar kach im ein kemach ein Torah, v'kemach ba hinei al dakos hamizonos, asher hizkika chachmaso yisparach lezeha nivra, v'spardu b'zeh mishar ba'alei chayim ka'omram zeh l'shono in psachim." We're going to explain in a second. Kishamar echa, kishamar kadosh baruch hu la'adam, v'kotz v'dardar, v'achatas eza v'sadeh, amar oili, ani v'chamuri, v'avos echad, klamar lulashin nidkaku mizonosav, l'fidakos chomro, loya magia, l'shlemos ha'torah. So there's an element here, and the reason why it's focusing on kemach is because what do we eat as human beings? Right? So we don't just eat flour. We don't just eat, you know, wheat. Right? We have to do something to it. And there's different elements of how much nutritional value there are in various different things. So he's saying here, let's read it again. V'amar achar kach, im ein kemach ein Torah, v'akemach ba hinei al dakus hamizono. So kemach represents the, how would you explain, dakus, the simplicity of food, right? It's food at its simplest level. The basic level, asher his kika chachmaso yisbarach, this is what Hashem's wisdom required for us. Lezeh nivra, because this is what at the base level, this is what wheat is, and it's different. His pardu bezeh mishar balei chayim. We're different than other animals, as it says in this Gemara in Psachim. Kilomar, skip a line. Second word on the third line. Luleishin nidkaku mizonosav lefi dakos chomro lo haya magia l'shleimos haTorah. If it wasn't for the fact that I could be sustained with this base elements of food, I wouldn't be able to obtain this high level of Torah. V'chein, keep reading. Luleisha kavana b'mitzios hu shleimus haTorah lo is kikum chachmas leisbarach b'mitzioso lioso mizonosav nivcharim v'nivdakim v'naosim likbo haChachma ki ayaz ze az levatala. V'kivim bezel yosa adam misorer amalas mitziuso v'nivraim hashafalim shalaisal lechinam v'yizarez atzim lahashem kavanas mitziuso. So I believe what he's saying is that when it comes, and tell me if you're reading this differently, is that God created the ability for us to have food that helps us. It's nivcharim v'nivdakim v'naosim lekibul chachma. So there's some elements of food that help us learn better. So this is the way I'm understanding what he's saying. It's very nutritionist would enjoy this sort of statement. Is that we could, let's just take it from a very simple level. Right? If I drink lots of wine, I will not be able to focus on my studies. Right? I'm not going to be able to pay attention. If I eat certain types of foods, that will help me concentrate better. If I eat other types of foods, it'll take my focus away from what I'm able to concentrate on. So I think what his message is, and again, it's maybe I'm reading it wrong, but what I think his message is that it's important when it comes to our study of Torah to be able to eat the things that provide us the amount of nourishment that's appropriate, that doesn't detract from our ability to concentrate, and if anything, enhances our ability to concentrate. So we might all, again, the wine is a simple example, alcohol is a simple example, but there could be others, and again, a nutritionist might be able to explain this better than me, but there are certain foods that can help us concentrate better, like coffee, and there are certain foods that could detract from it, can make us not be able to, you know, it's so physical in its essence that it detracts, it hurts our stomach so we can't focus, it doesn't, right? And there's certain elements of things that we should be eating that can help us concentrate better, and that's why it focuses on here, Kemach, which has this element of being able to help concentrate better. Flip the page. You see a few more examples. So now, if you look at source number 7, so the Tiferes Yisrael has a little bit of a caveat that goes back to help our original problem. Our original problem was that it's too black and white. So Rabbeinu Yonah reinterprets it and means that it's not physically a problem. You could be rich and you could have food and not have Torah. So Tiferes Yisrael says, I'm going to also reinterpret a little bit and tell you that there's exceptions to the rules. Whenever we have black and white theological statements that if you get if you do this, you will get punished. So this is a broader question than Kemach and Torah. This is a question on generally. The Torah says, if you do X, this punishment will happen to you. This punishment didn't happen to me. So what does that mean? So theologically, there are ways that Chazal get around these types of issues and explain them that it's more complex than a simple black and white issue. So look at source number 7. Im ein Torah, ein Kemach. Without Torah, there's no flour. Shemivatel Torah mi osher, sofer levatzla mi oni. So this is something that that's also in Perkei Avos in a different place. That if I don't learn Torah when I have wealth, eventually the statement is that I will eventually not have money at all. Again, that's a simple if A then B statement. But the problem is that doesn't always happen. People who have money and don't learn Torah don't necessarily become poor. So here's the brackets. Two exceptions. Imlo jeschus tolalo. So one way out of the problem with black and white theological statements is that I might have some other schus. Right? So you're saying if I have money and I don't learn Torah, I'm going to become poor. What about the fact that I give a lot of tzedakah? What about the fact that I saved somebody's life? What about the fact that I did X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 etc. that gives me merit? So don't look at it as black and white only. This is assuming if you isolate all other variables, if this person has no other good things going for them, and they have a lot of money, and then they don't learn, they will lose that money. Yes. That's assuming there's no other factors involved. But once you start adding other factors, like they do other good things, then you can't make black and white statements anymore. So that's one exception to the rule. Zchus tolo. There's some other benefit that can provide them, that can hold for them their wealth. Just because they don't learn Torah, they're not going to lose it. And then there's a second exception. Oshu bechlal umeshalim el sonav al panav la'avido. So what is that talking about? So sometimes, another thing Chazal say, that sometimes people are so bad that God will not punish them in this world. And in fact, He's not only not going to punish them, He's actually going to reward them in this world in order that they suffer more in the next world. Right? This is... Let's try... When we get to these types of questions, I should have made this statement. Let's make this blanket statement. Don't apply any of this to yourself. Okay? Because the whole point is that we have no idea what we're talking about. Right? So, I think that's what's going on here, is that you have these statements that are black and white that can't be taken literally because of all these other factors. What are these other factors? Again, I might do other good things. What are these other factors? Right, so you have somebody who's doing well. Are they doing well because they're successful, God loves them? Are they doing well because God wants to punish them? I don't know, so forget about it. Don't worry about it. All you have to do is try your best. Right? Do mitzvos, don't do averos. That's our tafkid. But the point is that don't look at somebody who has money and automatically assume, oh, it must be they're doing good. And don't look at people who are poor and say, oh, it must be they're doing something bad. We have no idea. There's too many other factors. So the real question then is, so why make these blanket statements? Right? So then why say, imein kemach ein Torah? And why say, shemavata Torah miyosha sofa levata mioni? So I think the answer is that there is truth in theory to these statements, meaning the statements themselves are important to know that on a theoretical level these things are should be correlated. Yes, we can't make those assumptions and we don't really fully know the big picture and how it works, but there is something to be said about simplistic reward and punishment. To think about it from that perspective, to motivate us to try to do the right thing. Will it work out exactly this way? We don't know. But as a motivational factor, it is that simple. Yeah.
Maybe it is in Yesh Kemah, by somebody who can support the other ones, so there's Torah. Right. Maybe not by himself. Right. But
so that would be
the Torah.
That would fall under this zchus tololo. So I'm doing, even though I don't know Torah, I don't learn Torah, but I'm supporting other people, so I get that zchus that my wealth should be sustained. Okay, good. Right. So go. Let's see now source number 8. So we're still piling on explanations. The Medr Shmuel, we'll see, has 3 different interpretations here, and within these 3 different interpretations, most of them will be non-pshat interpretations, meaning that there's some metaphorical explanation to teach us a broader lesson. So let's look at the Medrash Shmuel here. You have 3 paragraphs. Let's start with paragraph 1, see where that takes us, and hopefully we'll have time to do the rest as well. So he says, Im ein kemach ein Torah. Im ein Torah ein kemach. So he says, Nakat im ein kemach lashmienu agav orche. So he's going to teach us the fact that it uses the word kemach, which is something we started off asking. Why use the word kemach? Just say food. Why kemach? So the fact that it uses the word kemach teaches us something agav orche, which means as a side point. It's derech agav. It's telling us there's a main point, and the fact that I'm using this word is teaching me a secondary important point. Ki eina Torah miskayemes beidunim uvema'achalim rabim. Torah, and this I think is similar to what the Me'iri was saying, or at least the way I was interpreting the Me'iri from before. Kemach, Torah is related to kemach in the sense that it doesn't say im ein, you know, chont and kugel and lachmajin, there's Torah, right? No, it's simple. Simple. Don't go crazy with food. Don't go crazy with fancy dishes. If you want Torah, the Torah is related to kemach. Simplicity. Yeah. Simplicity, yes.
But to me, kemach is related to bread, and bread is sacred.
Sacred and simple, right? Sacred and simple. I think that's the point, right? So okay, he's not saying that you can't eat nicely and you can't on Shabbos, you can't have nice food, and you can't, there's something about cooking and all that's true. But there's something also true that when it comes to Torah, if you want Torah, if you want to learn more, then you need to focus on the learning and not focus so much on the cooking and the eating and etc. Okay, yes.
Nobody who cooks starts with making a fancy cake. Pastry students make very simple things with just flour and a couple of ingredients, and then you build on that. The same way the Torah. You start with the pshat, and you start adding rashi, and other perushim.
I like it. That's not what he's saying here, but I like it. He's talking here about the relationship between food and Torah. He will in a moment use the metaphor to jump off to teach us a lesson about learning Torah, which is good. He says something slightly different than you do, but he's going to use it as a metaphor. From right now, that's not what he's talking about. So let's keep reading it. One second. Let's keep reading it. So he says, "Ki kachi darcha shel Torah." So he quotes us a mission that we're going to get to eventually in the sixth parak of Perkei Avos. This is the way of Torah. Pas b'melech tochal. Right. In order to obtain and to acquire Torah, we have to live on a simple diet, if you will. We can't be obsessed and spend so much time with ingredients and food, etc. Bread, salt, water, you're done. You have enough nourishment, you have enough calories to keep you going. That's what you should do. V'lachein lo nakarim ein mizonos ein Torah. So he says, that's why it doesn't say without food there's no Torah. Lashmianu ki dai lo bekamach levad. It's enough to just have the flour. V'odish mianu shenis. So it doesn't say chita, because maybe you have three possibilities here. You have the stalk of wheat, you have the flour, and then you have the fancier mizonos, right? The finished product. So he says that could have said im ein chita ein Torah. So he doesn't say chita; it says kemach. Why? Because there's a flip lesson here. Is that I don't want to be the one who's dealing with making the flour. I want the flour and the food already to be made for me. Because if I, just like in the desert, the Jews had the man fall from the sky, they didn't have to, quote unquote, waste their time shopping, cooking, you know, all that process takes a ton of time. So if you're spending hours doing all of that, then those hours could have been spent learning. So if your goal is to learn, then it's better, he's arguing, to have all of that pre-prepared for you and not have to toil in the actual cooking process. Yeah. We got. We'll see. There's more metaphors to do with bread in a second, but yeah. We want it to be too easy. Okay. So hold on. So let's. We'll get there. Hold on. We're foreshadowing other things. So let's continue. When we get to the end, if it wasn't said, feel free to chime in. So he says here, Va'amar od im ein Torah ein kemach va'av shanu roim kama artzos batei maleim kol tov. So he says we see lots of people. Getting back to the other problem, we see lots of people who don't have Torah but have refrigerators full of food. Also akemach eno kemach rak chashuv ka'afra da'ara. So he says similar to Rabbeinu Yonah, that's not real food. That's not important food. There's no spiritual component to that food. Because everything is for the purposes of Torah, so that kemach that they have, their food, is just not important. It's not chashuv, similar to what Rabbeinu Yonah said. Next paragraph, so he's going to continue. Be'evshar od, lefarish. Sheratza tanalam denu ofen limurat Torah. This gets back to what you were saying, that the metaphor is to teach us how to learn. In order to get to the depths of halacha, so I have to be very careful, very precise, very analytical. So Tachun heitev. When I'm learning, the metaphor of wheat here, of the flour, is that I have to grind the learning. Meaning I have to learn with such an intensity that I'm getting down to the finest components of what the ideas are. So the metaphor here goes from flour to teach us about how I'm supposed to learn. I'm supposed to learn by analyzing deeply. Ad asher dak v'asenu kemach. I make it so thin and so clear and so fine that it becomes flour. So there's an element of how I'm supposed to learn. I go, I get to the basic elements, and then I start analyzing one by one. V'yamor ala emes, until I get to the truth. So he quotes another pasuk that brings out this idea. But the main idea of paragraph 2 here is that the metaphor is how to learn. I learn by finally analyzing in order to get to that kemach, to get to that flower. I can't just make it a course learning. I can't just make it a surface level learning. I have to get down into the nitty gritty and I have to grind. And that, I think it's a powerful metaphor about how our brains are supposed to work when we're learning. We're not laid back. We're not just listening. We're trying to analyze. We're trying to understand. We're trying to grind. We're trying to get down to the core of what the purpose is. And now the last paragraph, Freddie's going to talk about what you were talking about. Rabbi Yisrael Pireshim Ein Kemach Ein Torah. So there's another interpretation, Kolomar. Im kol ha'olam yaskimu lirdof achar avodas limud ha'Torah v'achachmos, v'lo yatu libam lirdof achar avodas ha'aretz lizorav lintoa kiyotze bo mitzarchei ha'adam, ya'avdu v'lo tischayim ha'Torah. And so if everybody went and decided that I'm going to be the one who just sits and learns all day, that's going to be me. If everybody decides that and nobody works in the fields and nobody, you know, grinds the wheat and nobody breaks the bread, then the world's not going to work, right? That's not going to happen. Ki ha'adam medini b'teva, because people are social beings naturally, right? We are connected to a broader world. V'efshar lo l'skayim gufo im lo b'shituf ha'olam. I cannot, my body is not, we are bodily people, we have bodies. It's not going to work unless I have some sort of connection to the broader world. Kamru Chazal, like the sages say, Reben Zoma Ochlesin Bahar Abayis, Amar Baruch Shabara Kol Elu L'Sham Sheni. So Ben Zoma sees all of these people who are working and he says, thank God they're all there to make me this food, right? So it's nice that the food's here. Somebody had to make that food. Kama yaga adam rishlan velotam melugma achas atchazar v'katzar v'amar v'dash v'zara v'kavar v'tachan v'rakot v'lash v'afa. So adam rishlan, if he wanted to eat something, he had to go through the whole process. He had to do all those things. We're not even going to translate them for the sake of time. But he had to go through the whole process of making bread. V'achar kach achol, then he ate. V'ani, but I, omer umotze kol elufan. I go to the store. I literally just go right over here. And I have everything right there. Without help of other people, we all do different things. Then the world would not work. And then we wouldn't be able to learn either. If everybody was so smart, everybody was so wise, and everybody, you know, learned Torah all day, then the world would stop. Not just food. What about, I need a tailor, I need a construction worker, and many other things. So we need some strong people who can work the fields. They can build, they can construct, and they can do the masal kisfeyem. Again, the metaphor here, like animals. Again, I don't think he means that negatively, but the point here is that we all have different talents, we all have different skills, and we all bring those together in order for the world to work. So his understanding of Ein Kemach, Ein Torah is slightly different than everybody else, and saying that we need both of these. We need Kemach, and we need Torah in order for the world to work. Everybody has different roles. Now, I think that still fits in with the first paragraph. If everybody has different roles, and my goal, take it from a broad sort of social statement about how the world works, to my personal goal, if I choose, or if it's my capability, or if I have the schus to be able to do so, to be the Torah learner, and that's what I want to do, and I have the capability to do so, then I have a choice to make of how do I get my food, right? Do I spend hours and hours in restaurants, right? You can't be like part of a This is going to be a controversial statement, but I still think it's true. You can't be like a hardcore foodie guy, like who's like all into like knowing the finest restaurants and getting to the finest meats and foods, and also be a talmid chacham. Like it doesn't work. You have limited amount of time to invest, and yes, so other people can. It's good to have a butcher, a baker, and a candlestick maker, right? It's good that all those people do those things, but if I choose, or I have the capability to be the learner, then the message goes back to the first paragraph of, I shouldn't spend my time doing other things. I should keep it simple, I should eat the pas b'melach, and I shouldn't focus my energies on trying to get all the latest culinary delights that may come up on the foodie scene. So I think that I think both messages are true. Yes, you need a broader aspect of social responsibility and the connectedness of the whole world. But then once I choose that this is what something I'm going to be doing, then I shouldn't be wasting my time doing things that aren't essential to my goal of learning Torah. And when I learn Torah, just fitting in the second paragraph, I should do it in a way where I grind down and I get into the nitty-gritty and understand fully and not just do a surface level of learning, but I should continually learn until I get to the essence of what I'm trying to learn.
Gluttony
is definitely against the Torah, whether I'm a sage or not a sage, right? So the question is, again, there's nothing wrong with investing time and effort into, as a whole, having dishes and nice food for Shabbos and Yontif and Pesach and whatever. It's part of Jewish culture, and there's a religious element to that too. There's spirituality that can be invested into food. But the point is, though, is that when I'm doing that, it's a forced choice. I don't have time to do that and to prepare, a Dvar Torah for the Haggadah. So I can choose one. So do I go with a simpler food choice and then also have time to learn? Or do I invest that time into the fancier dish? I would argue, again, this is everybody's personal choice, is that go simple, right? Make the simple chicken and then spend that extra half hour that you would have taken into grinding and cutting and chopping and all that stuff and learn a Dvar Torah. That's my personal choice that I would try to do, and you could all decide on your own what you would like to do. So now, go to source number 9. It's somebody give me a time, please.
10 o'clock.
So do I mean it also for women? So I would say, again, I'm biased. I'm biased to my own understanding of how I would like the world to work, so I understand that I can't necessarily totally get it, but I would say yes. I would say why there is a personal element of choice here and a personal element of what gets me going spiritually. So I'm not making that choice for anybody. And it could be that for men too, there's some element of spiritual. I mean, you had in the Beis HaMikdash, there was recipes and there was ways of making food in a way that tasted good. There's spirituality to that. I'm not taking away from that. I'm just saying that if I had a choice between cooking something fancier and learning, I would choose learning. That's not necessarily a strictly chiyuv Talmud Torah question, right? It's not necessarily like, do you have an obligation to learn Torah? It's a question of, do I want to focus on learning or on food? So I think that question could go to, for women as well. Again, maybe there's less at stake in the sense of, since it is absent a chiyuv Talmud Torah analysis, it might be less on the line, but I think that the message would be there as well. But again, to each their own in that decision. Correct. 100%. That's the point. Invest more time, if you want to get down to the kernel, invest more time into spirituality rather than physicality. How that exactly plays out in every person's life, that's up to them to decide and to figure out. But on a simple level, I think that if you have the choice, if it's the chicken's going to taste good, simpler and right. When I cook, my wife works, I work, I cook. She cooks too, but I cook. When I cook my chicken, I only cook roast chicken. The kids love it. I eat it. We're happy. I sprinkle garlic, pepper, paprika. I put it in the oven. I'm done. That's it. So what do I have to spend an extra hour finding a recipe, cooking, garlic, pepper, paprika, I'm done. That's simple. That's simple. She does it too. From her perspective as well. Maybe I convinced her this over time. But it's like, okay, she's working, I'm working. What are we gonna invest so much time into cooking for? If the kids eat it, everybody's healthy. It's enough to get going. What are we investing so much time for? That's my personal thing. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, talking about the workers and the learners, we have examples of, say, the Ramban and Rambam were physicians. Barbanel was financier. Is the issue that if they were not these specialties, they would have learned even more? Or, I mean, how do you combine,
specialties? It's a good question. So, meaning, in terms of, if we're making this sort of black and white distinction, which I hope I now realize nothing's black and white, but if we're making these black and white distinctions between Torah and learning, and there's a limited priority, there's a limited amount of time that I can invest, are we saying that you shouldn't work at all, you should just spend your time learning? I think the answer is no. You don't just have to go to the Ramban and the Rambam, just go to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, right? That's how we started off the whole shiur, is that he was a businessman, he had money, right? You could combine both, but I would say that what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would tell you, or the Rambam and the Ramban would tell you, is that within that framework of investing into financial or business perspectives, there will be trade-offs, and that the goal in those decision-making, you know, whatever decisions come up, is that to the extent that you can choose learning and Torah in terms of excess of business, then choose the Torah and the learning. Don't do the excess that you don't need either to survive or to help people. You know, if you're a physician, you're healing people, there's spirituality in that as well, but there's always a cutoff where at a certain point you're going too far and it's cutting into your ability to learn Torah. But again, the Rambam would all tell you that they probably spent their first, you know, 30, 40 years of their life just learning Torah, or, you know, and then they had what they needed before they invested into these other things. Okay, now we have a little bit more time. Let's see source number 9. So the Maharal, I think, frames a bunch of the things we've been talking about in slightly more sharp terms. So the Maharal says here in source number 9, "V'amar kemach v'lo lechem." So that gets to your point from before. Why does it say flour, not bread? "Ki ha-kemach shehu dak ma'od misyaches el ha-sichli." So he associates kemach, which is fine, to seichel, in the intellect. "Aval lechem yesh bo gasus." This is a very Pesach-related message. Lechem has some level of coarseness to it. V'avos, it's thicker. "V'davar ze eino misyaches el ha-sichli." That's not connected to intellect. So intellect, according to the Maharal, is associated with fineness, and being coarse, being thick, is not related to intellect. So they're sort of opposites of each other. "Umipneshu tola ze bezeh, shamarimein kemach ein Torah, lakach hamisyaches yoser ala sichli." So it chooses the word kemach here to associate, to make the connection to the intellect versus the bread, which is less seicheldik. "V'od ki akemach ein bo seor shenim shol yetzer hara." And then again, another nice Pesach chametz message is that kemach, unlike bread, doesn't have the yeast, and the yeast is related in Chazal to the yetzer hara. "V'atorah misulekes min yetzer hara," and the Torah is sort of again the opposite, is absent yetzer hara. "Shekach amru im pagaba chamenuvel zem ashchel beis hamedrash." The Torah helps as a counteractive element to the Yetzer Hara. So the Maharal is basically doing, again, I think he's sort of framing a lot of the things we're talking about, is that the Torah is related to the Kemach, because the Kemach is very fine, and that's related to the intellect. The intellect is fine, versus the coarseness, the Yetzer Hara, the thickness of bread. That's why we choose the metaphor of Kemach versus bread in this choice. And then we're, yeah. Kemach has the same gematria as Pesach. Okay. I like it. I like it. That it fits exactly what we're talking about. So, okay, great. So I think we've exhausted the Kemach and Torah discussion. If you flip back, we're not going to do this now, but I'll show you what we're going to do, I guess, next week. Is number 5 and 6 is the second part of this Mishnah, where he's going to relate to the idea of the connection between wisdom and action. We've seen this in a past Mishnah. There was another Mishnah that we've seen that describes the relationship between Chachma and Ma'asim. So what's better? Is it better to be wise or better to act? If I'm wise without action or I act without being wise, again, what's the relationship between those two things? So he's going to elaborate on that, give us a nice metaphor for how to understand this. So we'll delve into that next week. We'll see how it differs perhaps from the original time where we saw it in a different Mishnah. And then if we have time, we might do this next week. We might finish the whole chapter. So we're almost done with chapter 3. This is the second to last Mishnah of chapter 3. The last Mishnah, chapter 3, is very small. I don't have that much to say on it. So depending on how long it will take us to get through the next half of this Mishnah, we might just stick in the last Mishnah in chapter 3, and that would make our chapter next week chapter 3 Siyum, and then that'll bring us into chapter 4, which has a ton of good stuff in it as well. So we still got a lot to go, but we're making fine progress at finishing 3 chapters out of the 6 of Pirkei Avos. So we're about halfway there approximately, although it doesn't line up exactly with the Mishnah, but in terms of chapters, we're halfway there. Okay. After Pirkei Avos, we still have another 2 years left. Yeah. We'll figure it out. Okay. Question.
Yeah.